Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Trupanion Medical Insurance for the Life of Your Pet is a proud sponsor of Pure Dog Talk. Trupanion invites you to sign up for their breeder support program. This program allows breeders to provide their buyers with special offers to help protect the puppy in the event of any unexpected accidents or illnesses as they transition to their new home. By clicking the link on my partner page, you can join the program today. Additionally, Trupanion will provide you with informational materials for your puppy kits, and they'll offer one-on-one support, all at no cost to you. Sign up at the partner page today and mention Pure Dog Talk sent you. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I am sitting here at a dog show in Yuba City, California, with Lori Wilson-Poust, and we just got done judging a fun match.
Yes.
And it was...
It was fun, absolutely fun, yes.
And so Lori and I have been wanting to talk about some of these things for a long time, so we said, okay, we're just going to go back, and we're going to tell people about this day we just had that was cool.
Yes, we were sitting in the ring waiting for the match to start, and two different people...
With two different breeds.
Two different breeds walked in to see what it was all about, and ended up entering their dogs at
yes.
the match... And showing, and they've never been to a class or whatever.
Dogs didn't know anything. Mm-hmm. Owners didn't know anything. And they had so much fun. The one guy with the Heavy Shell stopped me like four different times.
I know.
To thank me.
Yeah.
I actually happened to give her my audio book. I get the How to Stack Your Dog book.
Good.
I said, here's your prize for being the bravest person at the dog show today. Okay. Yes, that's $25. I don't care.
No.
Because that woman came. She had fun. She thought it was a good time. And she'll come back.
Right. And that's what we're missing. People always... try to guess as to what is missing in dog shows and why we're losing people. And I remember as a child, we went to fun matches in the park and we took a picnic
yes.
and we had the whole family
picnics
came.
In the park.
Yeah. And we spent the day with our dogs.
And our friends.
And our friends. And when our friends went to show, we went and watched them and we cheered them on. And it's a totally different environment. It's more welcoming. And it's not as intimidating for new people.
Exactly.
And it was a perfect example today of
perfect.
People walking up and just being interested in showing their dogs.
And I think, you know, we hear this every time I interview one of the longtime judges, right? I've interviewed half a dozen 50-year-plus judges. And every single time they talk about the fun matches and how there used to be fun matches with hundreds of dogs entered.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, my only sadness for this dog show is the fun match only had a dozen dogs. Or
no, 25,
yeah,
I think. Yeah,
I mean, a couple dozen. Mm-hmm. And so I would love to grow those entries and see that blossom.
I went to a fun match at the City of Hope. It was a City of Hope benefit match in Los Angeles 1 year. And I was still in junior handling, and I must have been 13 years old. And I was so excited because there was 30 or 40 kids in junior showmanship.
Right.
This is just the junior showmanship.
At a fun match.
And guess who judged the match? It was Frank Sabella.
Oh.
And guess who won Best Junior Handler?
Oh, my God.
I will charge you that. It was a fun match.
Right.
A dog icon judged at this fun match.
Right.
I remember I won a 10-speed bicycle, and it was
I
under
love
Frank Sabella. And there was, you know, 30 or 40 kids. It was
yes.
huge. And there was probably
yes.
200 or 300 dogs at the match.
And so this segues into the conversation you and I have been having kind of repeatedly over the course of the last couple of years, and many of us in the sport, many of us who are actively involved in the sport, who believe that the number of dog shows is part of our problem.
Absolutely is part of the problem. There are more point shows and less picnics in the park. And that is where we get our new people. And everybody always, it's a repeated question over and over again. How do we get people back? How do we get people back? And you get people back the way we all started, at a fun match.
In a picnic in the park.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I just think, far be it from us to be making policy here. Right? Like that's above our pay grade,
right?
Whether we have ideas or not, it's above
right.
our pay grade. But I really think it's something for some of our smaller clubs that maybe are struggling financially. Think about it. Think way outside the box, right? Think outside the box and say, does my club really have to have this 400 dog show? Or can I have more fun, do more good for my community, make more money, I suspect, having a fun match and a picnic in the park instead?
And along that line, a lot of the clubs that we talked about, too, have moved out of their main venue.
Right.
And they have gone to a cluster, so they're not having a dog show at all. And some of the members are concerned about not having a dog show in their town. Well, instead of having three dog shows, have two dog shows and have the match in their hometown.
In the park. Where you can bring the 4-H kids from your town.
Yes.
Where you can get the flyers up in schools. Right. But, you know, in this case, these were both adult women. And I have said this repeatedly. Right now, our burgeoning market, and I can prove it, podcast statistics, the burgeoning market who we are targeting as purebred dog enthusiasts, women age 50 plus. That is who listens to this podcast. Sorry, guys, but that's a fact. And that's who we see coming. They're empty nests. They have disposable income. And so let's encourage that group.
Mm-hmm.
Let's find a way for them to not feel so awkward and out of their element. Kids, a lot of times, will take chances that adults won't.
Right.
And
right.
So what's the thing to think about for making this easier for are adult people who are just getting started or maybe who would like to?
Absolutely. Today was a perfect example of it. Two adult women walking into a park with their dog and entering at a dog show, and they had an encouragement of the club members, encouragement from you and I judging.
From the other people.
Yes.
You know, the other thing that I was impressed with? Did you notice? Every single person in that ring said congratulations to each other.
Yes.
Was that delicious?
And they all stayed and watched.
Yes, they did. And it's hot. I mean, dude, it's 90 degrees out here.
Right.
And these people stuck around. They filmed to show, you know, what could you do better with your dog. All of those things were happening here.
And I understand that the 4-6 is to encourage people as well. But it encourages people who have practiced more. And this is more of a casual. It's still intimidating for people to go to a dog show.
It is.
And the 4-6 is mixed in amongst all the other dog shows. It's confusing.
It's loud. It's a dog show, right? Like, there's commotion, and it's people are running in circles, and they're crazy busy. And the new person with their four-month-old puppy comes with their eyes bugged out of their heads going, abity, abity, abity.
Mm-hmm.
How is that encouraging, is my question.
It's encouraging in the fact that they now the puppy of achievement. And I commend AKC for that, because I do think that there are people who are interested in that. There is that, but there's you still
but
miss,
before you get to them, you need these people.
You need people here, people at the park. It's a way to bring a dog show to the hometown for the shows that have left their area, and they're in a cluster with somebody else, but they can still have their dog show in their town and bring
have
new
it
people.
Be a fun match.
Yes.
It does not have to make points. And this is, again, a segue into a conversation that many of us have had, and it was triggered. We were on social media, and we were talking about, oh my gosh, there wasn't a dog show on the West Coast. Wait, what? Okay. How about the concept of it's okay to not go to a dog show every weekend?
It is okay, and I don't know when that started being the norm, that it used to be okay that you weren't at a dog show. And if you must go to a dog show, let's have a fun match.
Right.
Instead, I enjoyed my friends and myself. I went to a lure trial.
Right.
And my friends did some obedience work, and I had friends do other things with their dog. And me, myself, Sunday, we went to the park and had wine and cheese and sat with friends, and we talked about dogs. But that's what's missing, is that there's no encouragement of talking about dogs.
Oh, my gosh. And understanding, right? And I think that's so much. People want to learn. If this podcast has proven one thing to me, people want to learn.
Yes.
But they don't have a good way. They don't know who to ask, or they ask in a Facebook chat group that goes sideways rapidly, or, you know, whatever it is. And just sitting around having a conversation in a non-threatening and just being able to listen, right? So, I mean, I know when I was growing up, same like you and I are roughly the same age, came up the same way as kids, the whole nine yards. You sat as a kid on the edge of the grown-ups talking about dogs, and you picked
and
it up by
say anything. You just listened.
But you pick it up almost by osmosis, and that is something that is very difficult to come by these days, even for us. And I mean, because we're all so busy. Oh wait, I can't possibly sit and have wine and cheese and chat about these dogs because I have to race off to this next dog show.
Right, and sadly, it is sadly missing from our sport. It's a lopsided amount of too many dog shows and not enough fun matches, and I believe that having the fun matches after a dog show 90%,
it's exhausting.
90% of the people aren't going to participate because they have to go take care of their dogs, and they have to go eat, and they're tired, and they've been there at the dog show all day. The last thing they want to do is stay there till 9 o'clock at night at a fun match.
And, I mean, God bless the clubs that do it. There are still clubs that do it.
Yes.
And, you know, the Lewiston show is a great example where PHA has a training night one night and a fun match the next night. I love those kinds of things. In a small environment, that can work, where you build up that sort of expectation of that. But to me, the idea of just simply not having a dog show and having a fun match is so much more appealing. And think about it, for those of us who are starting to judge, I mean, like they do in England, you have an opportunity to judge, to learn how to run a ring, to make decisions about dogs without the rep standing there staring at you, tapping his pen.
It's intimidating. It's intimidating for me, and I'm getting ready to judge. I know anybody listening to this that has heard me say that says, we've heard that for a long time, Lori, but I am, and I just have to find the time to get the paperwork done, and I want to, but I believe that we really, really have to seriously
stop them. People have to
put
more hands, more hands-on opportunities for judges, more learning opportunities for exhibitors. Your club can have a fun match and a grooming seminar or a handling seminar. Find one of the local professional handlers that would judge and give us some. I mean, there are so many ways that if we could just get off this racetrack mentality, that we can actually do good things.
This club is Sunday is having a
Love that.
A bird pitch competition.
I love that.
Yeah, I think we have to.
For Mother's Day.
Yeah, for Mother's Day.
It's awesome.
It's perfect. That's encouraging to breeders. I would have entered had I had two of my puppies, which I do not, and I'm very sad about, but I would have loved to have participated in it, and it's a great thing. We need more breeders groups. Every time I am at a dog show, that they have a breeders competition, no matter how tired I am at the end of the day, I support it because I think it's important.
It's so important, and it has been in about the last, 10, 15 years, that the bred bite became such a huge problem. A professional handler is also allowed in bred bite. Well, okay, I bred that dog. I'm allowed.
I sat
to
up
be
all
a
night
breeder.
With the mother, right? Right, and that has to be encouraged. And the professional handlers.
But they're not encouraging professional handlers to be breeders.
I know. I used to be a professional.
I know.
I started as a breeder, then I turned into a professional handler, and now I'm just a breeder again. And have always bred my entire dog show life, but always have bred dogs. And I dare anybody to say that I'm not a breeder. You know, I put in the work. I do the work. I stay up all night with puppies and mothers and, you know, the heartbreak of it too. It's not all glamorous.
Cool. No, it is not.
It is not all glamorous. But we need to celebrate breeders, and I think the clubs need it. And I commend this club for, A, having a match, and, B, having this breeders' competition. They're having a
veterans competition. They've got a bunch of stuff. They've got clinics. They've got barn hunt. And I think what we are seeing, and I've heard other people say this, and it's absolutely accurate, what we are seeing as we, again, sort of shift the paradigm a little bit, people come to events where they can do more than one thing.
Right.
They don't just want to run around in left-handed circles. They want to go duck diving, or they want to go barn hunting, or they want to go lure coursing, or whatever fun thing. So clubs that are succeeding, clubs that are recognizing that, rewarding it, and providing it.
And I think that the clubs that are struggling financially, and they say, well, they have to hire somebody who judges three or four groups because they can't survive. It is having a side effect that people don't want to go to the dog show. My solution, and I think we've already talked about this, is that if they have a match, that can be a moneymaker, because you don't have to hire judges from far away. You don't have to pay judges. All you have, it takes three or four good people to put on a fun little match.
Yeah.
Have one less show. Hire one less all-arounder judge. And hire a provisional.
Hire provisional judges. And
permit,
you know,
judges.
Permit. Sorry.
Judges,
yes. We're old. We can't help it.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. I'm so excited, and I just can't hide it. Yeah, I know. I promised I was never going to sing again. But I'm saying, our new audiobook is available now. Whoop! Yeah! Pure Dog Talks, How to Stack Your Dog and Other Important Talks
is a 2-CD set featuring early mentoring episodes from the podcast, tips, and previously unrecorded pep talks. This is a power-packed opportunity for folks who don't want to search our exhaustive 260-some-odd episode library for just the topic they're looking for. This 2-hour series is a great resource for breeders and mentors, 4-H leaders, anybody that's looking for a straight line trajectory from what kind of dog should I get to raising a show dog, how to stack and move with your dog, to counting championship points for your new dog. Super easy to purchase. Just drop PayPal $25 a book to Laura at puredogtalk.com and make sure audiobook is in the comments and that your mailing address is included. Because shipping is free, that's on me, and I'll have it to you in just a few days. Breeder and mentor bundles are available. I'll give you a 10% discount on 5 or more, and this is a very limited print run. So get your order in today. May not be here tomorrow.
You know, the thing about it, too, is people talk all the time about the great shows, right? They talk about the Delgados, they talk about the Portlands. Part of what makes them great is those clubs are committed to panels that really are open to permit judges, that are open to breed specialist judges. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not hiring two couples that can do everything.
Nothing against.
They're wonderful dog people, and they deserve the respect that they've earned. But they're tired.
It's expensive. They're tired. It's expensive for people to go to dog shows anymore, especially on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. It's probably more expensive than anywhere else in the United States. Parking alone. Well, you know, even daytime parking is $10 and $12.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And motorhomes and hotels are, all over $100 a night. And
if you can find one that will take your dog.
It's very cost prohibitive. So everybody I know is very cautious about where they want to go. And you're right, those big clubs like the Del Valle, the Perry Georgia shows.
Right. I mean, right. North Carolina, they just had those shows. Right.
Right. I mean, a lot of really good clubs. And I have repeatedly tried to tell the people this. If you hire permit judges or breed specialists or what have you, your entry will go up and you will make more money. It will take up the deficit of not having a group judge do it. We were involved with a Tri-State Kennel Club in Joplin, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And the 3 years that we were involved in putting panels together and doing it, we looked at the entries. Say bulldogs used to be a really big draw there.
Right.
So we made sure we had bulldog specialists or non-sporting dog, people who
knew the breed. Right.
And we had a low terrier entry, and we ended up getting good terrier judges there.
To
and there
pull
were
an entry.
Majors in a lot. Majors are hard to come by in terriers.
Oh, yeah. In the Midwest,
in the Midwest, they had, I believe, 120 terriers.
No, they did not.
Yes. Because you just...
I was after I left, because I'm saying that would never happen when I was there.
Thoughtfully put the panels together. Right. And you're going to have people that hire their friends, and they... Because they're going to hire you, and that... I mean, that's still going to happen, but...
The less we can do of that, the better off we are.
Our sport will be. The better the sport will be. And if you can do that and get past that, you have to have two groups to judge at my show. I'd love to have you come. You have to not do that. You know? Have a match. Do a fundraiser to pay for your permit judge or your specialized people.
Find a sponsor. I was super impressed. I went down to Chenana Mizowick, right? That show down there in Arizona. They found sponsors, and they did all of this. They brought the mayor to the show to hand out the Best in Show ribbon. Genius, people. Involve your community.
Yep.
And I think that is a huge piece of what we're missing.
And all of that circles back around to you're going to have people who argue and say, well, there's not enough people in our club to do that. Well, you encourage people to get in our club. Fun matches. Draw them in. Draw new people.
And then be nice to them.
And then there's the other part of clubs. Exactly.
Be nice to the new people.
I mean, you have to be nice, encouraging.
Yes.
A show chairman. You need an assistant. Have an assistant so this person can learn from you so they can take
mentorship.
Over
Oh, look at that. Mentorship. You know, it's not just for dogs.
No.
It's for how we keep these clubs going.
Mm-hmm.
Because every club I know, and I know you're going to tell me the same thing, is run by a half a dozen octogenarians that have been doing it forever, and they're exhausted.
But they won't let any new people in with new ideas.
Exactly.
And they have to.
So we have this fulcrum, right? Between new people come in and are excited and get shut down. Old people don't want to deal with the reinventing the wheel. And so, and I'm sorry, I'm not meaning to be mean in the old and the new. I'm just saying this is reality. And they don't want to deal with the reinventing the wheel. And so they just shut it down. And then you're left with those same people running in the club.
Mm-hmm.
And they're exhausted.
I know there's people that I'm very close to that are about to quit clubs because they won't listen to any of their ideas. And longtime dog people have a lot of good ideas. And especially people who show a lot and travel to a lot of places, they have good ideas that need to be listened to. And if you're a club member and...
You've only ever done it this way, you can only do it this way.
Think about it. You have to let new people try. And if you let them apprentice under you, then you can tell them the way that you like to do it. But you also, at the same time, have to accept maybe some new ideas that you could change.
Right. And take a chance. And not every idea is golden, but until you try it, you won't know. And I think I just really love these clubs, small or large. You know, Olympic Kennel Club. Up there in 8 o'clock. They have busted their butts.
Yes.
They've gotten the specialties. They've gotten the dock diving. They've added all the huge number of
events.
And
they have over 2,000 dogs.
Oh, way over 2,000. But they have grown that. I have been going to that dog show since the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And they've grown it.
You're not going to eliminate some clubs.
Okay.
There's been a couple.
Mid-90s. I had to stop there for a minute. I'm like, really? Wow.
But if you eliminate... some of the clubs that are just not doing anything. I don't encourage any club to fail or to stop.
Right.
But perhaps everything's spread so thin that there's not enough people. Maybe we need to condense it and make it so there's more workers in fewer clubs.
Right. That goes back to getting along.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's true.
You know, we've seen some great, great circuits split up because people don't want to get along.
I'm starting to think that's okay. I'm starting to think it's okay that we've lost some 4 or 5 day weekends.
Yeah. I think there could be a few 2 day dog show weekends, and that would be a delightful thing.
Well, and here's another thing you can say. You can the rankings, the race, the race.
Well, and this is right. This is where we were headed when we were talking about the, oh my gosh, there's not a dog show on the West Coast. So what are those people supposed to do that are trying to rank their dogs?
They have to fly somewhere.
Okay, so, and you and I can approach this from two different directions. You've run a top dog. I have not run top dog at that level. I never wanted to. I'm going to be completely honest. I never wanted
to. Never want to again.
Chose not to.
Right.
Said nope, thank you. But I think what you and I were talking about earlier, about taking away the rankings as a motivation by putting our focus back on the breeds...
Absolutely.
You know, the other one, this is where a lot of this conversation in my mind about Picnic in the Park, I was down here in Northern California a few weeks ago. I judged an Irish Wolfhound fun match. So a single breed fun match. They had probably as many people as they had here at this all breed fun match. They had a picnic in the park. They all sat around and talked. They had a little handling thing. They had a little grooming thing. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, there needs to be more of that. And I know there's people who have done far more than I have, but one year that I ran for the Winky Award for Top Hound, I was telling you earlier, I won 136 group first.
Right.
The dog.
And you don't win every group you walk
not
into.
So I shudder, and I never did add up how many dog shows I went to that year.
And
but
that
that's
was
too
in,
many.
Think about what year that was.
That was in 2013. 13?
Right. So that was 6 years ago.
That is, and
and you know there's
now.
More.
There's more dog shows now. And all of us do dog shows because we are competitive in nature.
Mm-hmm.
We are. And you give us a dog show or you get us something that's close to ranking, you know, we're number one, we're going to keep going. I mean, then that's just our nature.
Yep.
And so there needs to be some sort of revamping of a ranking system to make it more quality dog shows and less quantity.
Yep.
You know, rank the shows by a point system as far as this is a 10, this dog show's a 10,
right.
this dog show down here is a 5. or whatever. So maybe we wouldn't all go to all those little tiny dog shows and gather things up.
Well, you know, and I think that one of the things I always thought of when I was fighting rankings and running dogs, what if we talk about I won 28 groups, but there was 6 dogs in my 28 groups. I won 2 groups, but there was like 28 million dogs, right? I mean,
right.
You know, some of that...
Quality versus quantity.
Yeah, I really think that... I mean, there's smart
and
statisticians out there.
And you have to go to that many dog shows...
Yes.
...to be a top dog in your group.
You have to
go to the little 300 dog shows.
And beat up on the poor local people that are there and not very happy to see you.
Right, but you have to do... I mean, that is a side effect of what the ranking system has created.
Right.
And with it so hard to fly now...
That's a good point. This is a great, let's use this as a positive.
Mm-hmm.
Let's quit saying that it's tragic that we can't fly our dogs. How about if we say, hey, let's stay home?
I mean, I've done it. Believe me. And that's what you have to do to get when that is
been there, done that.
But, you know, most people who know me know that I drove 99% of the time. But that's hard on people.
Hard on dogs.
You know, your sanity.
And I think
it's got to stop somewhere. Right. It's just getting worse and worse and worse.
And I think what's so important and what I go back to every single time, Lori, this is about the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And if we are killing our dogs, not literally people, not literally, but if we are wearing our dogs out, if we are stressing ourselves and our dogs, to what purpose?
That's not the betterment of purebred dogs.
No, it's really not.
My last special that I showed, she was number one in her breed and number two in her group. And I did not go to dog shows every weekend. She lure coursed.
Mm-hmm.
She did obedience. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed my dog because I have done that. And obviously, when I got close to being number one hound, I tried a little harder. I mean, that's
right.
Our competitive nature. I am not going to lie.
Right.
Of course, I went to more dog shows. And, you know, then they changed the ranking system for that year in October. That was... really not fun.
Delicious.
Yeah, but you know, neither here nor there. But the point is, I did other stuff with my dog, and I was still able to be a top-ranked dog.
Right. And this is the last thing that you and I had talked about that I think is so important for listeners to hear. We can, as exhibitors, choose our level of involvement in this sport.
Absolutely.
That is what one of the things that I have always found to be so great about it.
Mm-hmm.
I can choose. I can choose to do picnics in the park with my dog and be perfectly happy. I can choose to kill myself to be number one all breeds. I personally would not be happy doing that.
Right.
But everything in between is fair game and available for each individual to choose.
Right.
And it takes a lot of working up that ladder of competition before you start running into the real underside of our sport that we cannot deny exists.
Right. The best campaign I've ever done was this last
one. The last one,
a couple years ago,
mm-hmm.
where she was number one, and I got to do other stuff with her.
Mm-hmm.
We took weekends off,
right.
And if a dog ended up number one that way, great.
Right.
If it didn't,
so much of it is about that. We're talking about that mindset. Am I having fun? If you are not having fun with your dog, do something different.
But then there's the flip side. You and I both used to be professional handlers. Okay, you're making money doing this. And
mm-hmm.
I guess it's the carrot dangling in front of you as a professional handler to have a top dog all breeds or
mm-hmm.
top dog in your group. And there's that there. So you're not going to stop that from happening unless there are less dog shows or a different ranking system where it prevents you, because we have to be almost stopped.
I remember writing a column back when I was writing the column for Best in Show Daily. I wrote a column about this,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, like, there's a cliff out there. It is not good, in my opinion. It's not a good thing. And I know people who do it as well as anyone can do it, who are as careful, who are as dutiful, who are as focused on that individual dog, and do it beautifully.
Right.
And it is still difficult.
It's difficult. Ask anybody that's done it. They'll almost always tell you they never want to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very small little group of people, very successful at it, and done it more than once, and good for them.
More power to you. They're a better man than I. I can't do it.
But there's several weeks. Well, there's 6 dog shows a week. And if you're running for top dog, you go to those 6 dog shows a week. And what does that do? We almost need someone to force us to stop. And I think the only solution is changing the ranking system,
yeah,
where it's not required for you to go to that many dog shows, right, and go to more quality dog shows than...
Well, and I think as much as anything, it's, once again, putting that emphasis back to the breed level.
Mm-hmm.
Because we all love competition. We all love big hoopy hollery stuff. But if we had, in essence, 50 Whippet specialties a year,
mm-hmm,
and 3 big all breed dog shows,
mm-hmm,
I'm just making, right, stuff up, right? How much more quality is there going to be in the breed?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's going to get better. And you're going to sit around and you're going to talk about your breed and you're going to get better dogs so you can compete at those Whippet specialties. And that's what.
And then the quality rises.
Yes.
So that when you get to those 3 or 10 or whatever number it is, mm-hmm, giant dog shows around the country,
mm-hmm,
not all of them on the East Coast, I might, mm-hmm, add to the East Coast people who are listening,
mm-hmm,
there's great quality dogs there, you know, to look at.
You know, the most top winning dog I've had was competing with another one of her breed that was equally as good at the breed level, and they competed against each other at the breed level.
You guys went to head to head a lot.
And it made each one of the wins more important and more memorable because those two dogs competed a lot against each other.
Two good dogs.
And they were two good dogs, and there are many judges that put both of them up at different times.
Different places.
And instead of running from your competition, you need to go against each other. But all this conversation all begins at Picnic in the Park, I believe.
Yes, absolutely.
Because if you don't have that, you don't have the foundation for any of this to stand on.
Right. All right, well, I think that is a perfect closing note. I appreciate your time at our picnic in the park. It's beautiful here today in the shade.
In the shade.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.